We're in paper 28, section 5. We're in the final subsection of section 5, that subsection number 7, which is on old single column, page 313. So is that, everyone got that? That last of the seven secondary Sakonophim, the discerners of spirits. That's what we have left to do in that section tonight. All right, and let me just remind you of one basic element, a couple basic elements, I guess, about the pattern that we were pointing out. Sort of the basic kind of overarching pattern of these secondary Sakonophim. That we've got seven different types of secondary Sakonophim. Okay, and there's three that are assigned. You know, I guess you could, so you know, you can kind of follow along. You know, if you go back to the beginning of the section, there's three that are assigned to the perfecters of wisdom, three that are assigned to the divine counselors, and then the one we're going to read about tonight, the one that's type that's assigned to the universal censors. Okay? And what we saw last time when we were going through those first six types is exactly what we would have expected to see based on what we recognized back when we were reading about the perfecters of wisdom, the divine counselors, and the universal censors. That the fact that there's three different types of those Trinity origin beings, not surprisingly, lines up with the threefold actuality. Okay, that you have that basic individuality, associativity, unity pattern that's being expressed with those three different types of Trinity origin beings, okay? And you had the individuality that we're going to read about tonight with the universal censors. You know, there's the ones that actually are really designed to zero in on individuals, on individuality, assess that aspect of reality, the individuality facet. You had the divine counselors who are designed to engage the unity aspect. And then the super additive consequence of the relationship between individuality and unity, associativity, the perfecters of wisdom are engaging that associativity. Okay, and we noticed, sure enough, as you're going through the Sakonophim that are assigned to them, you can see that pattern. If the very fact that you're, you know, talking about wisdom and philosophy, the first two isn't enough to point out the associativity, we saw with the union of souls, that very definitive associativity between the individuals being engaged and fostered. And then when we went to the three for the divine counselors, I mean, you just glance at them, heart, joy, satisfaction, service. I mean, you can, you know, just see shades of the unity ministry, right, in their names, you know, joy, a literal spirit word. And then the other thing that we noticed that not only do you see the threefold actuality pattern, but you even see the super additive relationship in that, you know, in that triad, in the triunity, really. In that triunity. In the fact that, if you look at, if you look back at number two there, the soul of philosophy, or the souls of philosophy, remember how we were pointing out, you see in that first sentence, how they kept pointing out that with these angels, they're daughters of a mother, so we're expecting that their natural, their nature, let's just say it that way, that their nature is going to reflect that mother relationship of a certain place-like character. But then they point out that they get directionized for certain duties. And they kept using that term. You can see that, you know. And they said, with those, when not otherwise directionized, so in other words, when they just are falling back on their basic mother-related nature, each one of these aconophim is in reflective synchrony with a higher angel in the central universe or on the Isle of Paradise. And we noticed that with the three aconophim that are assigned to the perfectors of wisdom, those higher angels are three different types of primary saponophim on the Isle of Paradise. And then we noticed when we went to the three for the divine counselors that resting liaison, with two of the saponophim, it's with a tertiary saponophim in Havona, and then with the satisfactions of service, it's with a primary saponophim, or primary saponophim, excuse me, primary, it's hard to keep all this straight, a primary saponophim again on the Isle of Paradise. And oh, wow, this is exactly what you'd expect. That when you're dealing with the ones with unity and individuality, the liaison angels should be sort of down there in the plane of the central universe. And then when you get a super additive consequence, it should be, you know, in liaison with the higher angels on the aisle. And you even have the additional pattern fulfillment here that with the two that are coming into association to give the super additive consequence, obviously the unity side is the spark. Okay? And so sure enough, all three of them aren't with a tertiary saponophim. One is a primary. And it's even with the satisfactions of service, where again you'd expect that the whole point of service is, like with joy, you're really establishing that inner life, but then there's an outer life. You have the super additive consequence of the relationship between the inner life and the outer life that is service. See? So that's literally the spark, you know, that's striking the overall relationship up to the higher level of paradise. So it's all just fitting exactly as you'd expect, you know, in the basic threefold actuality pattern, and how unity and individuality are related, which is this, you know, which you know kind of acts and which reacts in a sense, you know, to make that super additive consequence, and so. You know, if the pattern holds, we would expect when we start reading the discerners of spirits that they're probably going to be in, you know, in their non-directionized liaison mode with angels that are in Havona. So let's see if that pattern holds. Okay, so let's jump in here.
7, the discerner of spirits. A special liaison exists between the counselors and advisors of the second Havona circle and these reflective angels. They are the only saconophim attached to the universal censors, but are probably most uniquely specialized of all their fellows. Regardless of the source or channel of information, no matter how meager the evidence at hand, when it is subjected to their reflective scrutiny, these discerners will forthwith inform us as to the true motive, the actual purpose, and the real nature of its origin. I marvel at the superb functioning of these angels who so unerringly reflect the actual moral and spiritual character of any individual concerned in a focal exposure.
Okay. So, first of all, you can see, sure enough, right off the bat, now the interesting thing, it's not a tertiary saponophim. It is a secondary, saponophim, or the secondary saponophims that are currently serving on the second circle. So in a sense, it's kind of in general with the secondary saponophim. Now, why it's the ones that are attached to the second circle, that's also completely expected once you unpack the pattern universe, like I point out so many times, and that's beyond the scope of going into. But when you unpack the pattern universe, the central universe, you understand immediately why it is that that when they're tuning, you know, when they're being attuned to the angels there, in Avona, those secondary supernafim, that it would anchor onto the second circuit of all the seven circuits. There's a foundationalness to the second circuit that you discover when you unpack the central universe. Okay, so now, you know, there's deeper mystery here that isn't immediately obvious, that, you know, is yet to be sort of recognized, and why the tertiary, why the secondary, etc. But at least in the you know, to the first order, we see exactly what we'd expect. We have basically a state that's in the plane, quote-unquote, of Avona, with a spark up, you know, and then with the perfecter of wisdom, Sakan of him, you know, they're the super additive, you know, position in the relationship. Okay, so all that is nice and solid. Now, like I was mentioning, we're finally getting to something that's much more immediately consequential to us, to everyone in this room. You know, we've been talking about with these Sakanafim how you know, every being is an open book to these Sakanafim. And you know, we've been kind of getting little hints of maybe being read by the Sakanafim, but now we're going to start really getting into where the rubber meets the road with us. You know, just look at that last statement. To reflect the actual moral and spiritual character of any individual concerned in a focal exposure. You will be made naked before the eyes of those on high. And they will see whatever they want to see. Okay, so just that, you know, and focal too. I mean, they're zeroing in on you, you know, and...
I didn't do it. Oh, yes, you did. Oh, look, the emperor really is.
But you thought it.
And the way, you know, and it, like we've mentioned this, it's, you know, it's a simple thing to understand in the hourglass model of our mind, that upper domain of spiritualized mind, that domain that's established by the capacity given to you in the ministry of the Holy Spirit from the mother bestows capacity. You have that upper domain, the heart, you know, the temple within, that by and large is what beings on, you know, really on high here are going to be concerned with, the real you, the personalized self. Okay, and in that hourglass model, okay, it's open on the top. They just look in the top, okay? It's not like they have to somehow penetrate through the sides and you've painted them, you know, with black paint so they can't see it. I mean, no, there's nothing to paint. You know, you're wide open to the whole cosmos on the top end of your personalized self. And so they're just looking right down on and in you, okay? That's the focal exposure. All right, and, yep, oh.
I want to say, you know how they always say that God judges you by your intent. So they see the intent of what you're doing. It may appear to be...
Well, if that's what we're looking at. But, I mean, they also look at everything else. I mean, if they're judging... If it's in the issue of judging you, okay, yeah. It's more than your intent. It's your real motive. It's much deeper than intent. They go all the way to the real motive. They don't rely on the fuzziness of intent. They go all the way to the real motive, you know, when you're being judged like that. But that's just one thing that's being looked at. Everything else is being looked at, too. Okay? Everything. Okay. Measured with precision, you know, put on the bulletin board for everyone to see on your Versa. Nothing is hidden. Okay, you know, words like reflective.
We probably don't even know.
You know, reflective scrutiny, you know, and the very fact that they're calling them discerners, you know, that definitive word. You know, there's no fuzziness. Nothing gets hidden. You know, you think, well, they're looking down at the top, so something that's down at the bottom might be kind of hidden in a shadow. No. Okay. No, they can sort it all out. Nothing is missed.
Do you think that's how they had an inclination that something was wrong in the mind of Lucifer?
Of course. Right. I mean, that's all this stuff, you know, all these beings, and as you'll see as we read some more here tonight. No, it's every being. You know, and so, you know, from day one, they know everything that Lucifer's thinking from the moment he was created until today. They've always known everything. They watched every step of him, you know, heading towards the precipice, and you know, but they didn't intervene. You know, and that's where you want to reflect on all that. That's one of the important things about this is they aren't doing this to stop anyone. You don't have to stop evolution. It's integrous. Everything will be fine. But it doesn't mean that everything isn't still, they still don't need to know everything for all kinds of various reasons. Okay. Definitely you want to start thinking about this. The issues, you know, of why they need to know all this stuff is for the sake of the system. The very fact that we were started out talking about the individuality, unity, you know, super additive associativity. I mean, where that really is true, that super additive relationship, you know, like where mind is the super additive consequence between matter and spirit. That's when you're looking at it top down. That's when you really see the associativity is above and the individuality and unity are below. So this is, you know, it's fundamentally in that top-down view, in that system view of the cosmic system. That's what's important here. We have this bias of bottom-up where we're immediately, having all this stuff orbiting about our nose, you know, and, you know, thinking it's all about us in some way or another, that it's all about individuals and concern about, well, you know, we got to micromanage Lucifer. No, don't think like that. The system has integrity, but the system is managed. The system is managed, not so much individuals micromanaged. You'll see that more as we go on. But here, like Pam was pointing out, we're dealing with the universal sensors here, the immediate agents of the Ancients of Days, the capital J judges, in that issue of judging. Okay, so, you know, you're dealing with those most deep of concerns, you know, the real motives underlying everything. Okay. They are probably the most uniquely specialized of all their fellows. Part of that is just the depth of penetration. And remember when we, you may remember when we read about the universal sensors, there's things about what the universal sensors and with the discerners of spirits, what they do that is quite incomprehensible, even to their fellow Trinity origin beings. You know, even to that divine counselor who's talking about it, he's mystified by the transcendence, both in scope and depth of what these beings do. Okay. And I think I mentioned it last time, so just remind again, in that the Ancients of Days need the universal sensors to do this real judging. element of the system of things, and they need a microscope in order to, you know, a very high-powered microscope to discern. These are the microscopes. These Sakonophim are literally the tool, the instrument, the microscope, quote-unquote, that the universal sensors look into to see what they want to see, and then they report what they see to the Ancients of Days.
So, Chris, like, yep. When you said that, of course, it makes me have questions about motive and intent and the actual purpose and the nature of its origin. So a person can, let's just talk person to person. Like, a person has he has an intention of doing something. But they can see, you said, they can see deeper than his intent, and they go deeper to see the moral level of...
Well, let me just explain real quick. I mean, if you hearken back to the Total Deity Seminar, we talked about how you even can see the origin of this in the nature of the Trinity and stuff. But the fundamental issue is that you have that motive where it's just your will that's involved. There is a result that is desired and willed. That's the motive. So predicated on a result, there's a will to act. That's the motive. Okay? You then have to translate that into an intention in the mind. You know, from that pure personality fact of willing, the motive, into a directionization of the mind, which is an intention. Okay? And that's fraught with all kinds of translation issues. Okay? That you may have a good motive, but you can't turn it into a true intention for reasons. Maybe you've got issues with your mind, so that it's hard to actually get it laid in there true. Okay? So they're not going to look at just that surficial thing of what got directionized in the mind, the intention. They're going to drop back. Okay? So they take into account issues that you have in properly expressing, you know, properly going to the purposing of the mind. Okay? Okay? It's tied back to that cycle of the Paradise Trinity we talked about, the will, the action, the purpose of the Paradise Trinity, as you go around the cycle. That purposing, that's the intention, the intent. Okay, yep.
We don't need to imagine this as taking place in some sort of coliseum whereby we're being watched and ridiculed. I think we can think that it will be far more kind and discreet.
And as we'll talk about when we get to the end of this section, there's some other issues that come in play with us. So maybe to start with here, instead of trying to interpret everything we're reading in these first three paragraphs relative to you, think more about celestial beings, say. The last paragraph will zero a little bit more in on mortals. Okay. All right. So let's get some more here.
The discerners of spirits carry on these intricate services by virtue of inherent spiritual insight, if I may use such words, in an endeavor to convey to the human mind the thought that these reflective angels thus function intuitively, inherently, and unerringly. When the universal sensors behold these presentations, they are face to face with the naked soul of the reflected individual. And this very certainty and perfection of portraiture, in part, explains why the sensors can always function so justly as righteous judges. The discerners always accompany the sensors on any mission away from Uversa, and they are just as effective out in the universes as at their Uversa headquarters.
So again, that last part, just the mechanism involved, you'd expect that. There's no inhomogeneity to the reflectivity mechanism. It's exactly the same everywhere, that cosmic presence of the supreme mind is you know, ubiquitous and uniform. Okay, so you don't have to be on your versa, you know, at a kind of a hub to do this. See, and just how they're pointing out, you know, he says, quote unquote, spiritual insight, if I may use such words. Right, I mean, because don't get confused with spiritual insight, like when we talk about the cosmic intuitions, you know, so that's why he put it in quotes. But he's trying to get you to do just what I told you to do, view it in the hourglass, okay? You know, it intuitively, okay, he can look in, and there's insight. He can not only look in, he can see in, okay? You know, that's what intuitively means, that he can look in the top. The upper domain of the hourglass is just like all of the residences or buildings of any sort on any of the architectural worlds. They don't have ceilings. Okay, you can look in from the top. Okay, so, you know, it's just exactly like we were saying, is what he wants you to visualize. And, you know, naked, is like I said, in the naked soul. And, you know, here, you know, use soul in a generalized, think of soul in a generalized sense. You know, even though literally, say, Lucifer doesn't have an adjuster, you know, related to adjutant mind, making a mirage of soul, you know, blah, blah, not that kind of soul. But they have every being still has a temple within, formed, you know, like in a local universe, by the ministry of the Holy Spirit. Still creates a temple within that inner bastion, you know, that heart of that being's mind, you know, is what's being penetrated and assessed.
Well, Chris, yeah. Isn't only the good things in our soul? None of the bad things are in there.
Again, when it starts, it's good. Okay, so think about, okay, so go back to our example. Initially, the only thing that's in the upper domain of the hourglass is what's there by grace. You have that initial encirclement of the Holy Spirit. You're given an initial supreme thread of encirclement in the Holy Spirit so that there's something in that upper domain. You are given a bit of personalized self by grace. And it's done by God, so it's supreme, okay? It's flawless. And the adjuster comes, you know, now post-Pentecost now, the adjuster comes, makes a copy of that initial personalized self that is supreme in quality, and thereby grace, makes a copy, and you have a little embryonic soul, which, of course, then is also supremely well-formed. But you know, when you start using your free will, you could start messing this up. You could start twisting it, destroying it, unraveling it, or making it better. Okay. But the better point was, you know, if you couldn't make it worse than what it started, then you go, oh, so I'm innately divine. There's nothing I can. Whoops, that's the third principle of the Lucifer Manifesto. See, that's that point where you've got to catch yourself. Just because you're started divinely by grace, it's really not yours per se. It's that little nucleus about which your raindrop can condense. Yeah.
Okay, so they're looking at the good things that grew our soul, as well as the bad things that unraveled our soul?
I mean, it's really nothing, you know, I mean, when they look at that little embryonic soul, okay, they know exactly what they're going to find. So obviously that's not of any immediate concern. What they're looking for is what you've done by your will. Have you noticed what God started with very acute discernment and done your best to strike step with it? Or are you clueless to that and say, well, I'm just going to do whatever I damn well please? Yeah, well, damn is the operative word then. If you follow that track.
I'll be damned.
All right. Okay. So they're looking for, You know, it starts with error. It starts to confuse that self, that personalized self. It goes to evil, starts to disrupt that personalized self. Then it goes to sin, it starts to destroy that personalized self. We'll get into that more when we get into the tertiary supernafim, or tertiary stachonafim.
You didn't finish.
Self-destruction. let's see here now. Let me get myself back to where we were here. So, what they're saying there is just what we're expecting. You have these very definitive agents of the ancients of days so that the judging can happen as it needs to happen when it needs to happen. Okay, so let's get this next line here.
I assure you that all these transactions of the spirit world are real, that they take place in accordance with established usages and in harmony with the immutable laws of the universal domains. The beings of every newly created order, immediately upon receiving the breath of life, are instantly reflected on high. A living portrayal of the creature nature and potential is flashed to the super universe headquarters. Thus, by means of the discerners, are the sensors made fully cognizant of exactly what manner of spirit has been born on the worlds of space.
Okay. So there, you know, you can see how that's definitely kind of more shades of celestial beings. Right from the moment some group of beings are created, they're all scanned, by all these different sakonafim, and scanned in every way. They know everything about every one of those individuals. You know, they can immediately calculate, all of the basic things that's going to happen with that individual initially, and everything. To the extent to which they're just going to be functioning pretty much mechanically as mindful selves. They start with as they're made, and they go forward. They can, they can project that with perfection. Okay, so, you can even imagine, see, when Lucifer was created, they would have immediately known, the beings way on high. It's like, well, you're going to have to watch this one. Right from the moment he's created, they see there's a potential that unless he chooses definitively, he's going to fall. Now, to a degree, of course, any Lenana deck has that potential, because they're all, potentially can go into rebellion. They're not that innately perfect, but there would have been some initial differential that would have made him a little suspicious. And
so, remember when it talks about the thought adjusters, mm-hmm. when you're first born, kind of vie for come to you, or this person, that person.
Right, you're picked, yeah.
Yeah, that may be, do you think some of this information gets back to them?
Okay, well, that's a similar thing with the seraphim. The seraphim look at your conception, what genetic factors came together at conception and calculate your life. And they send that projection to Divinington. So it's a seraphim, again, angelic mathematicians doing a very similar thing. And just calculating all of the basics of what John Hay is going to be, unless John Hay actually exercises some personality, which you can't predict in advance. But besides that, they can build an artificial mind of John Hay on Divinington. You're just practiced inside of that artificial mind. Lived out your whole life as you've been living it out.
Got married, divorced.
They knew all that, yeah. Because again, remember here what he says, and I assure you that all these transactions of the spirit world are real. Again, he's saying that because if you try to understand this bottom up, from an individuality viewpoint, that's impossible, you're saying. There's no way they could project every jot and tittle of what John Hay did over all these decades. No, they're not magically creating a universe with John Hay at the center they have a system. They're looking at the whole system. They know every single component in the system to 90 decimal places. Okay? They can calculate the whole system. They know what everyone on this planet is going to be doing in relationship to you, all projected forward. They know the whole system is a system. Okay, that's why they can do this. Okay? And if you let that sink in, it's like, well, okay, I can see how it's possible anyway. But that should be even more mind-boggling to you, that there are beings that can do deductive, mathematical calculations predicated on every being in the universe of universes. You know, all those beings are input into their equation.
Mm-hmm. Then there's no free will.
Yeah, I mean, of course, all of this is apart from free will. I mean, free will changes what happens. But, when you're dealing with issues like of judgment, you're only dealing with lowly beings that need to be judged like this, okay? And those lowly beings aren't able to manifest much personality yet. They aren't up high enough. They haven't gotten themselves up high enough to manifest enough personality to make these calculations meaningless.
So, Chris,
it's sad to record, remember.
They know everything that we're going to do here. And then if they see something that we're going to do that could hurt us, they will maybe send the angel, the guardian angel, to do something to change it.
It's extremely unlikely.
Because... Just let me just say this one little thing, okay? If you don't mind. Because when I was a little girl, and I've told you the story a million times, when I was like 10 or 11 years old, and I was going to steal something because I saw the Breakfast at Tiffany's thing, and I thought that was a cool thing to go into a store and steal something. So I was going to steal something. So they knew that I was going to do that, okay? So I pick up something, and then it was a picture of Jesus Christ, one of those little photos of him in a little frame.
Right.
So I put it back down. Right. I said, okay, I'm not stealing anything. I'm not going to steal. You can't steal Jesus. Okay. So they knew. I mean, if that wouldn't have happened, who knows what would have happened to this person right here, but I think they intervened. They had to.
Well, again, see, that's what I know where you're going because I've heard the story many times, and I want you to challenge yourself. I want you to challenge yourself to think about it from the top down instead of the bottom up.
All right.
That's what I'm trying to challenge here tonight. Okay, in the top down point of view, they don't have to intervene in things. See, when we look at a bottom-up, the only way we can rationalize these things is there had to have been an intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The fifth epical revelation is here to tell us that there's something called a God that's within. God the Mother.
Mm-hmm.
God the Mother doesn't have to intervene.
She's already there.
She's already there. She's the individuality of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
There's an integrity in the whole system. They don't have to rearrange the things on the shelf. I mean, everything coincidentally, quote unquote, just happens to come together in this providential, quote unquote, way. All right, there's a system. Now, even more important probably than understanding that for just your individuality perspective, what about Pentecost? Okay, Pam is fine. Okay. When we start talking about the judges, everyone goes into Old Testament mode.
Mm-hmm.
There is no Old Testament anymore. Those laws no longer apply. Okay? You're saved by grace now. You get to the first mansion world by grace. There's nothing Pam can stumble and fail to get to the first mansion world because of. It cannot happen. Okay, we all have embryonic souls that have a supreme quality to them. You're resurrected.
Well, wait a second.
But when you when your child goes to the nursery world,
Let's not go. Let's not go off on all those.
Parents don't survive.
Okay. See, you can always bring in that. Let's stay away from the probationary nursery today. We are going to talk a lot about this, assuming we. Okay. If we can get to the last paragraph, we're actually going to talk about this a lot. But I want to just, remind you, we've probably done this 50 times in this study group over the years, and every time the room fills with fear. Yeah, Jesus said, fear not, okay? Right, allow yourself to objectively think about these things without fear. Everyone in this room is fine. None of you have enough personality to become iniquitous yet, basically. None of us do. We're too immature, okay? And there's not one shred of all-consuming motive to become iniquitous in this room. It's not even an issue, okay? In terms of what we've read so far, like I was saying, it applies a little bit more kind of to celestial beings, or it applies to you once you're a Marantia being. Between becoming a Marantia being and fusing or not, okay, what we've just been reading really applies. Because you're now a being that doesn't turn itself off. You're not mortal anymore. Okay? And so you need to be turned off if it's judged that you're iniquitous. Okay? So you're more in the Lucifer, functioning mode then, and this sort of assessment, will apply. Like I said, we'll get to, the mortal issue is another another component in this. Okay. Let's see. I just notice they use that breath of life thing, in term, coming from antiquity of human thought. We've pointed that out many times, that they take that term that started out as a literal, respiration, breath concept in primitive humans, and generalized it to, even if you have, does a seraphim breathe? No, but they're talking about a seraphim receiving the breath of life, so they're obviously not talking materialistically, literally here about breath. Every being, though, receives life animation, and every being comes into some sort of a metabolic process, of energy input and energy output, etc. Okay, so the breath of life. all right, let's see. There it is again, that what manner of spirit, like we were pointing out, they're having fun taking little chunks out of the Bible and giving them a place here. All right, so now let's get this last sentence here, or last paragraph here,
So it is with mortal man. The mother spirit of Salvington knows you fully, for the Holy Spirit on your world searches all things, and whatsoever the divine spirit knows of you is immediately available whenever the seraphic discerners reflect with the spirit concerning the spirit's knowledge of you. It should, however, be mentioned that the knowledge and plans of the father fragments are not reflectable. The discerners can and do reflect the presence of the adjusters, and the censors pronounce them divine, but they cannot decipher the content of the mindedness of the mystery monitors.
Okay. Now there's a bunch of stuff there. Let's start with the first part there. So they're called discerners of spirits, very purposely, because what we're talking about here in terms of relative to us, the only thing that they're discerning is your spiritualized mind. So not your basic, not yet personalized adjutant mind that's in the lower domain of the hourglass. What they're talking about is what has come up into the upper domain of the hourglass and was formed by the Holy Spirit, that temple, you know, that quote-unquote spiritualized mind that's been drawn up and, you know, into that upper domain, that's what the discerners of spirits are discerning. And the way they do it, like they're saying, is via the creative Mother Spirit. Okay? That it's the Holy Spirit is her personal spiritual ministry. So immediately she knows. And then they just get it from her. Okay? Okay, so that's a little new twist, you know, in terms of this focal exposure. For us, within a local universe, because, you know, we are talking about Sakonafim here, super universe angels. So when you're in the local universe, there's an intermediary in this focal exposure. But, you know, who's the focalizer of the local universe? The Mother, you know, Great Mother Spirit. Okay, so it's through her that this is technically happening. We've seen that before, that a number of things really only happen through her. The Spirit of Truth is only poured out, you know, via her, etc. She's the individuality of the whole. She has a hold of the basic system in play here. But what about that lower domain of the hourglass? What about just your basic, you know, agitant mind that's still kind of in more of that energy mode, hasn't really been spiritualized so much yet? You know, it's not so much the spirit of, in terms of the names of the adjutants, it's more the energy of, you know, whatever. When they say searches all things, when they use that phrase out of the Bible, they're actually hearkening outside of the immediate context here of the discerners of spirits. Everything else, just the more mindal as opposed to spiritualized or spiritual, is also totally known. Okay? Let's just quickly remind you of that. When you go up to paper 36, I guess if you want, you can flip there. On page 401 in the single column, paper 36, section 5, about the adjutant mind spirits. The third paragraph in that section, I'll just start reading, you can find it here. Third paragraph in section 5. The central lodgments of the adjutant spirits on the life carrier headquarters world indicate to the life carrier supervisors the extent and quality of the mind function of the adjutants on any world and in any given living organism of intellect status. These life mind emplacements are perfect indicators of living mind function for the first five adjutants. But with regard to the sixth and seventh adjutant spirits, worship and wisdom, these central lodgments record only a qualitative function. The quantitative activity of the adjutant of worship and the adjutant of wisdom is registered in the immediate presence of the divine minister on Salvington, being a personal experience of the universe Mother Spirit. So between on Salvington and on the life carrier world here, you have all seven adjutants completely seen. So for instance, when Jesus was conceived, the moment Jesus was conceived, there's a single-celled organism in Mary's womb that the first adjutant engages. Up here on Salvington, you know, in the life carrier world, they're looking. You know they would have zeroed in on that particular organism. They're literally looking at exactly what that first adjutant is thinking in that single-cell Jesus. They know every thought, first adjutant thought, of the single-cell Jesus. You know, they would be, everything okay? Does everything look like it's working? You know, quantity, quality, everything's fine here? You know? And they're watching it develop, and then the second adjutant engages at some point, and they're watching that. Okay, if they want to know what your fifth adjutant is doing right now, from clear up on Salvington, they can go to the board, and they can look at every single thing that you're thinking with the fifth adjutant right now. You know, and then take it out of the human context. You notice it's, you know, general here. I mean, there's an amoeba on some planet somewhere. If they want to look at what that amoeba is thinking, they can. From this emplacement. This is an insane thing. Okay. Every single animal, including every single cell, every insect. There's a mosquito somewhere on this planet. They can zoom in on and think and look at what that mosquito is thinking from here, if they want.
Big waste of time, but good.
Mosquito's about to bite Mary.
I mean, you know, what the angels and some of these beings do, just, you know, to wrap your mind around, okay, how beyond puny little concerns that we get ourselves wrapped into. I mean, they know everything if they want, okay? So, very amazing stuff. Including, when it gets up there into the sixth and seventh adjutants, it's like, well, isn't that getting kind of personal? You know, they can go right there, immediate presence, and they can see what Chris is doing with his sixth adjutant right now.
Okay, we're moving on.
Both quantity and quality. So, it really is. Searches all things. There just isn't anything. If they want to look in the lower domain of the hourglass, they can do that too. But obviously, that's of less concern to the cosmic system, because cosmic system, this distinction is vital. We always say. I mean, that linking together in the cosmic system happens through the mother. As a person, you're linked. Person to person. So, it has to be your personalized self. You know, that's what they're fundamentally concerned with for the, in terms of the cosmic system, is that spiritualized mind.
How come they can't read the thought adjusters?
Okay, then we're going to get to that. Okay, so now, what about this issue of not being able to decipher the content of the mindedness of mystery monitors? Okay, most fundamentally, it's because all that we're talking about here, we're talking about angels, children of the infinite spirit, conjoint actor. We're talking about the mind that has the third source and center at the top of it all, that type of mind. But there is another type of mindedness. The Father, the Universal Father and the Eternal Son, and things immediately related to the Universal Father and the Eternal Son, are also minded, but it's a different type of mindedness. Again, you have to go into all the details of that when you unpack the central universe, but it's a different type of mindedness. So that's the immediate reason why they're just seeing the kind of mindedness that stems from the third source and center, not this basically higher type of mindedness that's more of an innate phenomenon, more stemming from the fact that deity is minded, rather than I have individuality and I have unity and I need associativity, mind, to link the two. That's the kind of mind we're talking about here, that really associativity type of mind, as opposed to the more innate mindedness, it's like the mindedness of deity itself. Okay, so that's technically why they can't decipher. This is a different type of mindedness than they can read. But also, if they could, that would short-circuit the system. Okay, it's another example of you can't be feeding in that stuff that comes all the way up, goes all the way up to the infinite level, down into the finite. Remember, that's why the analogy of thinking of the adjuster is this infinite rod, the end of which is poked down into your temple within. You can't feed that. You can feed the what's going on with the tip into this system, but not the whole thing. Okay. So conveniently, they can't read them, because if they could, that would short circuit the system. Now, in that regard, there's a little qualification there, asterisk, or says that. There's an asterisk to that comment related to what I was saying about the very tip that's actually down in your mind. Okay, now that might be a different issue. If you go to paper 112, section 4, which is page 1231 in the single column, 1231 in the single column. This is a good place because it's in the context of the universal sensors again to remind us of this one little thing. The universal sensors can read one thing from the adjuster. Not its mindedness, but what can they read? So those first two paragraphs of section 4 there. When death of a material, intellectual, or spiritual nature occurs, the adjuster bids farewell to the mortal host and departs for Divinington. From the headquarters of the local universe and the super universe, a reflective contact, we're talking about here, is made with the supervisors of both governments, and the monitor is registered out by the same number that recorded entry into the domains of time. In some way not fully understood, the universal sensors are able to gain possession of an epitome, a summary, of the human life as it is embodied in the adjuster's duplicate transcription of the spiritual values and Marantia meanings of the indwelt mind. The sensors are able to appropriate the adjuster's version of the deceased human's survival character and spiritual qualities. And all this data, together with the seraphic records, is available for presentation at the time of adjudication of the individual concerned. This information is also used to confirm those superuniverse mandates which make it possible for certain ascenders immediately to begin their Marantia careers upon mortal dissolution to proceed to the mansion worlds ahead of the formal termination of a planetary dispensation. Okay. So, not so much directly the mindedness, see, that's being read, but the memory. That memory record, which is, like I said, it's down there on the tip, that was actually inserted in your mind, that they can read by this reflective mechanism we're talking about here. Okay? They don't mention it directly here, but they're using the discerners of spirits to, pull that information out of the adjuster as it zips past at infinite speed. Heading for Divinington.
Well, he's registering. registering and unregistering.
Right.
So he's got the 117 hours going out and 117 hours going.
Well, I don't think going back here, it sounds to me like they're just picking it up on the fly. Because, see, that's why they say he's registered out by the same number. He doesn't have to stand in line and get a new number.
But you wonder how long it takes them to register out.
Yeah, I know.
It took them time to register in.
You could assume that it was some time, but you could probably also assume that they just catch his number and then they register him out, mm-hmm. As opposed to him registering out. But yeah, maybe. It's not impossible. Yeah.
So this is at the local universe level of action. So when we get to a point of becoming a true spirit being, or even further to a finality, do you think this still acts? Do you think this is still something universal sensors have access to, depending on how far we advance we get? You know what I mean?
Well, all these Conifim, are reading everyone, even the finaliters within.
Well, they are?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there isn't issues of adjudication and stuff going on with all the higher beings, like I was saying before. Yeah. But they mentioned it a couple times. All these Sakonafim do many things. They're telling you, a few things that are immediately related to the ascension scheme and stuff that's allowed to be put in the revelation. And also, they can even say something that'll be sensible to us. I mean, they're obviously doing a whole bunch of things that we can't even comprehend to. Okay, so these discerners of spirits would be doing all kinds of different things. And so you could speculate, well, wonder what they're doing relative to the finaliters, for instance. You know, is this part of the super universes trying to do their best to plan for the next universe age, because the finaliters and a lot of these kind of mysterious beings are not really part of the super government. They're all working on this next age stuff. And
what they're picking up on, though, is kind of a historical experiential record as concerns that individual. They're not looking into the mind of the adjuster.
Yeah, right.
They're not picking up the plans of the adjuster.
See, so, I mean, a way you can think about what, you know, there's, like we've pointed out, you have the existential core of the adjuster that is, you know, absolutely going to be off limits to anything like this. But there's experiential nature wrapped around that existential core. And there's an outer crust down on the tip that in a way is like a copy of your mind, in a sense, you know, to a degree. There's a bit of your mindedness that's glued, you know, a copy that's glued to it, and your memories are in it, your spiritizable memories are in it. See, so they're reading that skin of mindedness that's kind of you. See, now you can, once you've fused with your thought adjuster, see, they're going to be reading you, and more, you know, they're reading the adjuster too, but see, that's because the adjuster, when you fuse with your adjuster, finally the adjuster actually drops down into the finite experiential level. Before that, it's above the finite experiential level. It's another reason why they can't read it, you might say, because, you know, they're looking like this and it's up here. And they can't see it. Okay. But when it actually drops down into their field of view, you know, and see, so that part that drops down, you know, that's you and it. It's and neither. It's, you know, so they can start to read that combined mindedness that's down there. They're still not going to read the stuff that's up above. Okay. And I just wanted to also throw in here, as long as we're here, in that section 4 in paper 112, if you skip down, you see those two paragraphs we read, and then the third paragraph, and the fourth, and the numbered list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then there's that paragraph that starts, if you're in the single column, it's at the bottom of the page, if, when death overtakes you, see that right after number 7 there? If, when death overtakes you, you have attained the third circle, or a higher realm, and therefore have had assigned to you a personal guardian of destiny, and if the final transcript of the summary of the survival character submitted by the adjuster is unconditionally certified by the destiny guardian, if both seraphim and adjuster essentially agree in every item of their life records and recommendations, if the universal censors and their reflective associates, who are discerners of spirit, see, Omniversa confirm this data and do so without equivocation or reservation. In that event, the Ancients of Days flash forth the mandate of advanced standing over the communication circuits of Salvington, and thus released, the tribunals of the Sovereign of Nebadon will decree the immediate passage of the surviving soul to the resurrection halls of the mansion worlds. I wanted to read that because that's what they were, you know, referring to at the end of that second paragraph that we were reading this. And notice it involves what we're talking about. So, you know, these discerners of spirits, along with the universal senses, have an awful lot to do with getting us launched in the cosmos here.
Not to mention fusion.
You reminded me. So back there in paper 28, did you notice how they mentioned that even there, the discerners can and do reflect the presence of the adjusters, and the censors pronounce them divine? Okay, remember, that's just like the seraphim. They can see the energy at the interface between the adjuster and the mind that glows. gives off a luminosity that angels, be they seraphim or these seconophim, can see. You know, so they can see that interaction energy, even if they can't see. You know, and we're talking mindal energy, interact, you know, that kind of energy, even if they can't see the mindal energy of the adjuster itself. But they can see that that mystery of mysteries interface energy, you know. The fact that you can take something that these Akonofen can't see, put it into something that, you know, they can see everything about. Yeah. Nothing easier to discern than your adjutant, you know, mind there. And that somehow there's an interface between those two, that isn't something that is just completely, you know, that's the mystery of mysteries, that somehow there's an interaction there.
Kind of like an induction point.
Yes, that sort of thing, yes. You know, and we've talked about that. You know,
I hope it's not like an induction.
But we've talked about that. I've used that analogy of induction, yeah. You know, in this, you know, when if an adjuster disengages, you know, if you have a self-acting adjuster and it disengages, when it re-engages, there's an inductive spike. This is a literal energy system. Mm-hmm. Got this, you know, unimaginable energy fact that is the adjuster. Remember, it's pure.
It's literally called flyback, actually.
Right.
It's in our own.
Yeah. I mean, it's a literal pure energy fact, and you're plugging that in. There's this inductive spike. That, you know, that's the flash where people can pick up on things.
What do you mean people can pick up on
things? You know, if an adjuster disconnects, say, because of a near-death experience, when it reconnects, it's at that moment that it reconnects that, you know, you'll get this flash. And of course, if you don't know there's adjusters, you're going to think you had some experiences and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you're getting this little flash of its consciousness and what it experienced put into your mind. And of course, you immediately are going to translate it into whatever gobbledygook is in your head, you know. But it's because of that spike, see, and you have this literal energy thing. You know, it's normally a calm thing that you don't notice. Not when you plug it in.
Oh,
where's
the surgery master on this?
Normally, you know, a relative 6-year, you know, roughly 6-year-old isn't going to experience that because they're so limited. There's such limited mind that the adjuster is plugging into. But you take an adult where there may actually be some significant mindal energy that it's plugging into, and see, and you can get an energy spike. Yeah, well, we've talked about that. You know, that's unfortunately, we don't have surge protectors. And so if you drift up there and get too close, it's a bug zapper. You'll be fried. You don't want to get close until you're ready to get close to that much energy. Okay. Now we're going to go into the tertiary seconophim. And like I said last time, see, these discerners of spirits, there's some relationship to the significance of origins, the first of the tertiary ones that we're going to read here. So let's get into them.
Sixth, the tertiary seconophim. In the same manner as their fellows, these angels are created serially and in 7 reflective types. But these types are not assigned individually to the separate services of the super universe administrators. All tertiary seconophim are collectively assigned to the trinitized sons of attainment. And these ascendant sons use them interchangeably. That is, the mighty messengers can and do utilize any of the tertiary types, and so do their coordinates, those high in authority and those without name and number. These 7 types of tertiary seconophim are...
Okay, before you go to number 1, this is the one little side. I mentioned this last time. Remember, this they aren't repeating it here because this is the same pattern in terms of this serial character that we saw with the secondary seconophim. That, you know, so the first time the reflective mother spirits make 7 of these seconophim and you have 3 tertiaries made... You're going to have a significance of origin is a firstborn, you'll have a memory of mercy, and you'll have an import of time. So in that first set of seven, those will be the three types of tertiaries. The next set of seven, you'll get a solemnity of trust, a sanctity of service, and a secret of greatness. And then in the next set of seven, you'll get a soul of goodness, and then you'll go back, you know, and get another significance of origins and another memory of mercy, etc. Until finally, you have 20, you know, if you go through the whole cycle, you'll have 21 tertiary sakanafim. You'll have three of each of these seven types when you start this cycle all over again, you know, where the first one is the significance of origins again. Yeah. So in the process of getting one of each of the primary sakanafim, like I said last time, you'll get 21 secondary sakanafim and 21 tertiary sakanafim. Yeah. And it follows this purely rigorous order thing. It's like they're saying serially. It goes through them. He's wrapping through the seven. Okay. It's kind of a wheels within wheels thing that you have two cycles here of seven that are working out together. Okay. And the reason that it's worth challenging yourself to put that all clear in your head, that's very much a pure individuality line of thought. You don't need any unity consciousness to just get that all sorted out and really definitive, all that precise individuality, and it's training for the individuality consciousness to think that all through clearly, get that all straight in your mind. It will help to have that more individuality consciousness to combine with your unity consciousness to get some of that, more of that super additivity happening. Okay? To get a little bit more of a personal living philosophy in that upper domain, the hourglass. You want to be a personal living philosophy. That's the personalized self. You know, it's not a religion, it's not a science, it's a philosophy. That they're reading when we're talking about these sakanafim. That upper domain of the hourglass is filled with a philosophic you that they're discerning, a triunity you, okay. The real you, the consequential you, the significance you, the significance of origins. All right.
One, the significance of origins. The ascendant trinitized sons of a super universe government are charged with the responsibility of dealing with all issues growing out of the origin of any individual, race, or world. And the significance of origin is the paramount question in all our plans for the cosmic advancement of the living creatures of the realm. All relationships and the application of ethics grow out of the fundamental facts of origin. Origin is the basis of the relational reaction of the gods. Always does the conjoint actor take note of the man and in what manner he was born.
Okay, so again, like I say, we're dealing with the kind of mind that is anchored by the absolute mind, the conjoint actor. Okay, just reminding you that whole system of mind that's anchored by the absolute mind is what we're working with here. Okay, so notice what they're... You got some new elements coming into play here. So this whole bit about origins that they're trying to get us to appreciate, notice how they describe this. And the significance of origin is the paramount question in all our plans for cosmic advancement of the living creatures of the realm. Like I said, the fundamental thing that why they're doing all this, it's about the cosmic system. This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. This whole question, pardon the pun, of of your relation to the whole and your connection through the individuality of the whole, being part of this cosmic system. That's what they're managing. They're managing the cosmic system. The whole universe is mind made and personality managed. They're managing this system. They're assessing you as an element in the system. Okay, so that's you can really see it kind of directly being stated there. They're worried about your cosmic advancement. You know, if you're going to ascend, you ascend as a part of the system. There is no such thing as ascending apart from the system. You can think of the system as just being a giant, weight bearing down on the individual that refuses to come into relation to the whole. And I mean, you are not going up anywhere until you put yourself in cooperative subordination to the whole. Okay? The moment you do, you begin to be drawn up. You have to be part of the system. So I say this distinction is vital. It's the fundamental truth about your life, vitality, your life. Okay, so now, but the other thing is, see, the moment that you recognize this fundamental system, the origin of any individual race or world, because we now brought in kind of a bigger picture here. This whole question of, like, for instance, the races, they're not only managing the system as a collection of individuals, but as an assortment of races. And of course, the basic six sangic races, for instance, vary from realm to realm, from world to world, and from system to system. And so, forget about individuals for a second. Just think about it at that level. They have this incredible collection of different racial, mindal phenomena that is all a complex system. Okay, that's all being managed. You remember how there's race commissioners, those spirit-fused mortals, and they get all the way up to the headquarters of their local universe, and they start to work within the local universe. First thing they do is they become race commissioners. They become individuals that are, in many ways, kind of almost an advocate. They really take it as their job to see to it that this race on a particular world gets the same kind of attention in the system sense that any individual gets. Okay? And it doesn't matter, if you have lots of blending of the sangic races, or in our case, the other races too, you still have those racial issues. I mean, they tell us that the race commissioners are very active on this world. And they also tell us that there's no pure line races anymore. See, so don't think simplistically about it. Each one of us is coursing with all kinds of cross currents of race. We have different races, going at each other inside of our minds, because each race has a different character of mind. So it's a very complex system that they're managing. The individuals and groups of individuals, races, and then even bigger groups, realms, worlds. Each world has to be considered as part of this system, too. And
the amalgamation of all these races within us as individuals does not equate to a new race. It's always
right,
races that we're made up of.
Yeah, and that's the key thing that they're trying to get us to appreciate about race. More, we think of race in such material terms. It's skin deep. For most of us,
yeah.
Okay, it's like no, that's irrelevant. When they talk about race in here, they're talking about mindily, because everything is fundamentally mindal. You have mindal cells. The matter is just scaffolding issues. Okay, the self is mindal. They're managing a mindal system. We've been talking about here. I mean, the whole communication grid is a mindal grid. It's literal conduits of mind energy. You know, everything, it's a mindal system. Okay, and so to take the idea of race up to its truth, there's a truth to race in mind. You know, like we've pointed out, it's so definitive that when you're resurrected, there's, you know, different halls for the different races, because you've got a, you have a mindal energy thing when you're making a Marantia being, and you can't mix the mindal energies, or you'll, you know, cross circuit things. You got to have them in separate energy chambers. And as Marantia beings, those racial mindal tendencies are still there. Skin color is long gone. All your molecules are long gone, but all those the racial aspects of mind are still there.
Then how do they determine which one's major?
What was
that? Blend. How are they going to decide?
Well, that this question about in terms of the our resurrection, they don't. I mean, I guess you have to assume that if you're not a pure line race, that you're in the chamber that's for the mixed, you know, for the blends.
Polyglot.
But, you know, they don't specify, so, you know, where's the is it a black and white cutoff? If you're not pure line, you're in the mix, or is there some, I don't know, you know, but, you know,
specialized.
But, but, you know, the whole fact that it's, you know, it's a very significant thing, even on Uversa, this is a very important issue to be looking at. You know, to have a significance of origin, penetrate Andre's mind, and figure out this the racial element so that they can put that in the whole system equation. They've got to know more than his individual issues. They have to know his racial issues, and everyone else in this room, they have to know our racial issues. It's part of this managing of the system.
We must be building custom chambers all
the time. Okay. So that's a pretty interesting new twist to put on race.
With the higher descendant beings, origin is simply a fact to be ascertained. But with the ascending beings, including the lower orders of angels, the nature and circumstances of origin are not always so clear. Though of equally vital importance at almost every turn of universe affairs. Hence the value of having at our disposal a series of reflective Sakanafim who can instantly portray anything required respecting the genesis of any being in either the central universe or throughout the entire realm of a super universe.
Even the central universe, okay, has to be taken into account in these system calculations. You know, and that's, you know, that adds that whole element like we've talked about, that in many ways Havona is a reciprocal, you know, element in this whole system, so that that reciprocation has to be taken into account in this. Okay, but they're getting a discernment of all the relevant creatures here. Now, the other thing there, okay, with the higher descendant beings, origin is simply a fact to be ascertained. Okay, this is what we've mentioned a number of times here, the same phenomenon again. When you have a very overt father-like phenomenon going on, like creating these descending beings, it's all right out in front of you. I mean, you don't need any sort of quote-unquote insight. You just need sight. You just, okay, watch it and write it all down. It's all very easy to discern, okay? But when you're talking about ascending beings, you know, including the lower beings like angels and stuff, that can become ascending as well, midwares, whatnot, you're not dealing with this very overt, definitive father-like phenomenon. You have this very mysterious mother-like, holistic phenomenon where there's a coalescence out of the whole that begins to be a part that you can point to, and it doesn't all coalesce immediately. You know, it coalesces over time too. So that's what they're talking about. That the fact that you have this sort of not overtly observable phenomenon of this coalescence within the whole, in the mother's presence, That's why you need these Sakanafim who are attuned to the whole, reflectively attuned to the whole. They can pull that out. They can see what's behind the curtain normally, with their insight, see, instead of sight. They can see into the whole and really appreciate, you know, even beyond just, you know, my genealogy, you know, what people on this planet fed into me and whatnot, and how all those people, including myself, fit into the cosmic system and stuff like that. But even beyond that, you know, the significance of my coalescence relative to the entire universe of universes, what part in that whole that I represent. And they can sense that even from the beginning. So you're kind of seeing the end from the beginning, you know, when you're doing this, when you have this holistic vision. It's almost like seeing me, you know, at the end of the present age when I'm first coming into being.
Well, and that's one of the standard things they use in psychology today. You know, I mean, where you came from, what your origin was, and what your family structure and all that kind of stuff from a mm-hmm. human point of view. Mm-hmm. When you try to discern, the ability to try to understand another person and you know, what makes them the way they are to a certain extent, that origin aspect is very critical.
Right.
Just at our level.
Yeah. Yeah. And here, right, you know, you're, like I was saying, you're talking about origin in the sense of the creators on the Isle of Paradise. I mean, ultimately, I was created. Okay? There's a creation to me coming into existence. It's not this overt thing that's easily ascertained. It's this very subtle thing through the creativity of the creative mother spirit. Another reason why they call her creative instead of a creator.
Oh, he came from Rancho.
That's right?
Excuse.
See, but you know that. But they, you know, they're looking at it like I said in that kind of after the fact sense of there's an eternal lighter, at least potentially, being created here. How does that eternal lighter fit into the cosmic system? You know, it's a unique place. And to the extent, you know, that they need to know that eternal lighter, you know, at least up to the supreme level, they discern it and can feed it into the system.
What you're saying reminds me about the statements before Christ Michael decided which pairing he wanted to have as his parents,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All this evaluation that was
right.
done of
right.
the background.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, can you imagine how significant the significance of origins were to that process, for instance, see? Right, Gabriel would have been, you know, tapping into all this sort of information.
And they mentioned that there were periodically outstanding people in that line of...
Right. And again, to just, you know, appreciate that there is some amazingly transcendent coincidence to what single-celled human Michael incarnated into. When all is said and done, when the grand universe is settled in light, you'll look back and you go, huh, isn't that interesting? That particular single-celled human got incarnated by that particular creator son at that particular time in that particular place. And look at how that makes the whole grand universe cosmic system whole in the end. You know, that level of profoundness is going on with these reflective Sakanafim. You know, they're seeing like that. Okay. Let's see here. We just did the first paragraph, didn't we?
Two.
Are we doing two of them? Yeah. Okay, let's see. Okay, yeah, I think we're going to let's go on to the next paragraph here.
The significance of origins are the living, ready reference genealogies of the vast hosts of beings, men, angels, and others, who inhabit the seven super universes. They are always ready to supply their superiors with an up-to-date, replete, and trustworthy estimate of the ancestral factors and the current actual status of any individual on any world of their respective super universes, and their computation of possessed facts is always up to the minute.
Okay, see, so they're you know, they don't say up to the second. They, you notice they say up to the minute, but
it'd be nice to be able to communicate with them.
You'll be able to engage them, you know, pretty early on.
Even now, to know what happened, you know, where he came from a couple of thousand years ago.
And notice, you know, they threw in just one little thing. You know, it's not just an estimate of ancestral factors, but the current actual status. Mm-hmm. See, it's like I said, that you know, your status relative to the system. You know, where are you as in terms of being part of the cosmic system? You know, maybe not so much, you know, your individual status per se, but your status in the system. Okay, they're giving you that assessment. That's part of their assessment. All right, now, you know, we're going to do this one other type of tertiary saccadophim here, the memories of mercy. So let's jump into them. We'll see it's not quite as scary as, because it doesn't involve the universal censors. But but it does bring in those issues again. You know, it's mercy after all. Okay.
To the memory of mercy. These are the actual, full, and replete living records of the mercy which has been extended to individuals and races by the tender ministrations of the instrumentalities of the Infinite Spirit in the mission of adapting the justice of righteousness to the status of the realms, as disclosed by the portrayals of the significance of origins. The memory of mercy discloses the moral debt of the children of mercy, their spiritual liabilities, to be set down against their assets of the saving provision established by the sons of God. In revealing the Father's preexistent mercy, the sons of God established the necessary credit to ensure the survival of all. And then, in accordance with the findings of the significance of origins, a mercy credit is established for the survival of each rational creature, a credit of lavish proportions, and one of sufficient grace to ensure the survival of every soul who really desires divine citizenship.
Okay, so literally, angels that can measure mercy, 2.58634298.75 units of mercy. Again, you know, mind is literal. You know, it's being literally assessed, you know, measured, weighed, whatever analogy you want to use. Yeah, so just, you know, an amazing thing to think about. But okay, so you see, like I said, the significance of origins, you see how they feed together here now. So Chris Halverson is conceived. And the significance of origin calculates, you know, exactly what my nature is, both as an individual and, you know, in the race and the world environment. Okay, they go, okay, here's what I get in Memories of Mercy. And the Memories of Mercy look at that, and they go, okay, so Chris Halverson has, and he puts some number down. This is the size of the whole, H-O-L-E, in terms of cosmic integrity that is in Chris Halverson. Just because of Chris's nature and where he is, in order for him to become fully whole, W-H-O-L-E, he's going to need to fill this divot in his nature. He has this much divot. He's going to have this much error and evil. Is a given just by his nature. They calculate how much error and evil are going to manifest out of me just because of my nature. I'm not sinning. Yeah, not sin, but just the amount of error and evil. So how much mercy will it take to fill that, you know, evacuated space that is my error and evil? Okay? And they establish a line of credit for me. I literally get this line of mercy credit. Okay? They go, well, it's going to take, you know, 10.58 units to fill that divot in his nature. And plus, you know, whatever, they add some very, very generous addition to that. Okay? And that's how much mercy credit I've got to play with.
Yeah, a credit plus a dividend.
Right.
You got a rotten credit to
mine. Okay? And so, you know, they're using these financial, you know, monetary terms because it's that literal. They're literally, you know, they're measuring out, they're pouring, you know, mercy into a reservoir. They got this much mercy. You got this much of a hole that has to be filled. Yeah, it's that literal.
Not just for this world either.
Right. And so what is this for? You know, this is for from me until I, from the moment I conceive until I fuse. Okay. And actually, you know, there is mercy beyond that too. I mean, once I fuse with the spirit of goodness, okay, I've got the goodness end nailed down now, but there's still error. So I still need mercy relative to that error. Like, for instance, a Melchizedek has to have some line of mercy credit established because he's gonna err occasionally. Okay? He's got credit that can fill in those divots, you know, in that Melchizedek. Okay? We'll get to this in just a little bit here. Again, this is really kind of, think about this more in the post-mortal life, about this playing out, so that you're more like the other celestial beings, you know, and thinking about this playing out, because there's a separate issue for us now that we'll get to in a minute. Okay, but it's, so you literally have these And they're keeping track of this. I've given, you know, well, the angels, angelic ministry has given Chris, you know, 1.35 units of mercy so far, you know, et cetera. They're keeping track of this. They're keeping track of my balance sheet, my liabilities and my assets in a balance sheet.
The memory of mercy is a living trial balance, a current statement of your account with the supernatural forces of the realms. These are the living records of mercy ministration, which are read into the testimony of the courts of Uversa when each individual's right to unending life comes up for adjudication. When thrones are cast up and the Ancients of Days are seated, the broadcasts of Uversa issue and come forth from before them. Thousands upon thousands minister to them, and 10,000 times 10,000 stand before them. The judgment is set and the books are opened. And the books which are opened on such a momentous occasion are the living records of the tertiary siconophim of the super universes. The formal records are on file to corroborate the testimony of the memories of mercy if they are required.
Okay, just that last little bit first, you know, if they're required. I mean, obviously, if it gets down to, you know, to a thumbs down situation, you know, every, you know, thing is checked and rechecked and cross-checked and, okay. But, yeah, basically the testimony is there with the memories of mercy. They go, okay, you can see he was given this big a line of credit to start with, and he spent every penny of it.
Yeah, he's bankrupt.
Yeah, he's bankrupt. Okay. And, you know, remember that one of the things that comes into play here, I'm going along and let's say I'm burning my credit, my line of credit, but I can choose, I can use my free will to fill the holes. I don't have to burn my mercy credit. I can choose to do it too. So if I'm in a mode of, you know, positive consecration and really working on taking care of my liabilities myself, I'm not going to need a lot of my mercy credit line. Okay, but of course, there's a flip side too. I can be working in this self-destroying mode of sin. Okay, and I'm going to burn through all of the mercy credits that I would have needed for the error and evil just because of my nature. And now I'm going to start going into the surplus because I'm making the holes bigger than what they were to start with. Now I'm starting to destroy my initial self. But eventually, you know, I'm going to run out. Okay.
It's too expensive. Yep. There's no budget for this guy.
Yep.
I don't know, maybe you'll come to something like this further on, but
mm-hmm.
I think we've probably all observed people who seem to come out of a simply wretched family background, and yet they've managed to grow and evolve to be amazingly creative or loving or helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you think this mercy ministry gets involved during our mortal life?
Well, for the people on the webinar, she's wondering if this mercy ministry gets involved in our mortal life. When you see individuals who excel even in the midst of horrific parents and environment they start in. Especially post-Pentecost, every one of us not only has the Holy Spirit, Spirit of Truth, and a thought adjuster. When you see someone excel where the environment would seem to predict it's impossible for them to succeed, it's almost like there's a God. yes. They try to point out, we love to, read more and more about the rebellion and the fault and say, what can you expect of me? We can expect a lot of you. We can expect a lot more of you than those mortals on that neighboring planet. You have the Spirit of Truth and the Thought Adjuster, every one of you. Okay? You have infinitely more than you could ever need to overcome any deficit. Right. Suck it up. Okay? It's time for you to stand up and do what you can do. There isn't anything that's holding you back except yourself. If you limit yourself to the ignorance of others, what can they do?
It's expensive.
Okay. So that's, you were wondering out loud there in the midst of the paragraph, where does that quote come from? Well, obviously, you're not going to find a Bible quote that's going to be quite like that, the broadcasts of Uversa issuing. Okay. They're having fun tweaking a Bible passage. Which Bible passage? It's in Daniel, 7th chapter of Daniel. That's the chapter where they get, that's where it says Ancient of Days. Three times in the 7th chapter of Daniel. That's where they're getting the name Ancients of Days from, is from the 7th chapter of Daniel. And here they're drawing from one of those classic statements in there. It's got all the stuff about thousands and upon thousands and 10,000 times 10,000. It has that sort of stuff in the passage, and they're just giving it a nice solid, fleshing out.
This doesn't have
Inversa. Right, it doesn't have that, and yeah. It has things about white hair and whatnot. But just go back there and I think that's verses 9 and 10 in the 7th chapter of Daniel, I think, if I remember right.
Daniel 7, 9 and 10.
Yeah, okay. And you can see how much they've tweaked it. That's a very significant, that is literally why we have Ancients of Days in this book. I mean, they're using that expression from Daniel there. All right, and let's get just one more.
We have to reconcile something here.
Okay, yep.
Paper 141, section 4, the teaching about the Father.
Okay.
Let me just read this. While sojourning in Amethyst, Jesus spent much time with the apostles instructing them in the new concept of God. Again and again did he impress upon them that God is a Father, not a great and supreme bookkeeper who is chiefly engaged in making damaging entries against his erring children on earth. recordings of sin and evil to be used against them when he subsequently sits in judgment upon them as the just judge of all creation. So we got to figure this out.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, got a couple things. I mean, are we reading about God the Father doing anything here? No. Remember, Jesus is trying to, distinguish your spiritual father from all the other things. You know, in particular, he'd really like you to start by distinguishing the universal father from the ancients of days, like he's not distinguished in the 7th chapter of Daniel, where obviously when they're saying ancient of days, they're referring to the one monotheistic God. You've got things blurred together. You've got the God of infinite love also somehow being the capital J judge. It's like, no, you need to separate that. There's the mercy side. It's definitely coming down from the love of the Father through the mercy of the sons. That doesn't mean there isn't a capital J judge still. Just because there's love doesn't mean there isn't law at the other end of the spectrum and the justice that comes from it.
Jesus was trying to differentiate, too, between what he was teaching and the Jewish life that they were indoctrinated into.
Right, and along that line, the other little thing in there that you notice he was trying to emphasize, I mean, even the ancients of days and the universal censors and all this are not using their spiritual consciousness like we all do as an error and evil detector. They're not immature. Okay? They're measuring the positive you. You know, they're not measuring how much error and evil here. They're measuring how much mercy has been bestowed. They're looking at you from a positive mode, and they continue to look at you at a positive mode until you go to zero. And then they look at you as a zero. They never look at you as a negative. Okay? So there's a lesson for us all. Can you look at your fellow man in that way? Can you stop using your immature spiritual consciousness, your initial spiritual consciousness, as an error and evil detector? Can you actually use it as a goodness detector instead? Forget about the error and evil. See if you can start writing up a tally of how much goodness you can find in the world. So the first thing you want to do is stop reading blogs, which are all error and evil detectors, and long adding machine lists of all the error and evil that they've noticed. People are
cat blogs.
People are creating vast, long lists of error and evil on the planet and broadcasting it to all the world. And we should all read this. It's very important stuff. Did you notice how much evil there is over here? Forget about it. No one is measuring how much error and evil there is. Okay? Start working in a positive mode. If you start noticing the goodness in the world, you'll start noticing that the universe is perfecting. That's the truth of it. If you don't do that, you'll conclude that the universe is imperfect, which is a fact, but a falsehood. Yeah. The truth is that it's perfecting. And you're only going to start to know that if you stop using your spiritual consciousness as an error and evil detector. Okay. So, that's the other point they're making there. No one on high is doing that. No one is an error and evil detector. Why? Simply because it's a nothing. You can't see it.
What about the discerner of the spirit?
But he's discerning something, 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 nothing. That's all he's discerning. I mean, like I've said, it has to go all the way up the chain. You know, lower beings are saying, I don't think there's anything there. Goes up the chain. The guy with the really big microscope, the universal sensor, zooms in. Nope, you're wrong. There's one little nano dot there still. Okay?
And it's something.
There's a little something still. That's what they're looking for. Are you a something? If you're a something, no matter how small, you have an absolute existential relationship to the absolutes. And that little something is everything. If you're a nothing, Well, then you're nothing. Okay, and we'll get to that nothing here in just a little in a second here, too. Let's read that next paragraph.
The memory of mercy must show that the saving credit established by the sons of God has been fully and faithfully paid out in the loving ministry of the patient personalities of the third source and center. But when mercy is exhausted, when the memory thereof testifies to its depletion, then does justice prevail and righteousness decree, for mercy is not to be thrust upon those who despise it. Mercy is not a gift to be trampled underfoot by the persistent rebels of time. Nevertheless, though mercy is thus precious and dearly bestowed, your individual drawing credits are always far in excess of your ability to exhaust the reserve if you are sincere of purpose and honest of heart.
If. See, if there's any sincerity and honesty, you'll never burn through that line of credit. It's impossible. Okay. We've talked about that a lot. I mean, it takes supreme effort to become iniquitous.
Fear not.
No matter how big the finite effort, you won't burn through the line of credit. It takes a full supreme effort to become iniquitous. Because this is some finite line of credit. So you got to get above the finiteness of it. You have to go supreme in your spending habits, okay, in order to burn through it. Now, like I said, that's sort of directly in play when you're talking about, you know, when you're thinking about you as a Marantia being, you know, trying to get to fusion or not. But there's another more straightforward issue in play to judge you by here, okay? No one survives a mortal life without a soul, okay? It doesn't matter what's in your mind. If you have no soul, it's irrelevant. Okay? So it doesn't matter what they discern there or not. See, so there's another issue in play when you're talking about a mortal. Okay? The literalness of this separate mind, this separate self, the potentially immortal self. I mean, mortal selves are just mortal. Okay? They're never resurrected. There's nothing to judge. It's irrelevant from the judgment perspective, your mortal self. Okay? And so if you if we go to paper 112 again, section 3, which is on page 1229 in the single column, I just want to read you the spiritual soul death paragraph again and remind you how this works, you know, before all this complexity comes into play, when it's actually a simpler issue. Okay, so, you know, that second paragraph, you know, item number one there in section 3 of paper 112, spiritual soul death. If and when mortal man has finally rejected survival, see, mortal man, when he has been pronounced spiritually insolvent, morontially bankrupt, in the conjoint opinion of the adjuster and the supervising seraphim, when...
Surviving
seraphim. When such coordinate advice has been recorded on Yversa, and after the censors and their reflective associates, who are...
Discerners
of spirits. have verified these findings, thereupon do the rulers of Orvantan order the immediate release of the indwelling monitor, but this release of the adjuster in no way affects the duties of the personal or group seraphim concerned with that adjuster-abandoned individual. This kind of death is final in its significance, irrespective of the temporary continuation of the living energies of the physical and mind mechanisms. From the cosmic standpoint, you know, that system standpoint, the mortal is already dead. The continuing life merely indicates the persistence of the material momentum of cosmic energies. Okay, so here we're talking about the universal sensors and their microscopes again. Okay, but what they're doing here is a little more straightforward. you really don't have to think about the whole mercy credit balance thing. Okay? This is just straightforward. You have this vessel. You have this literal Marantia thing that is initially filled with some value. There's some value poured into that Marantia vessel by God, by grace. What?
Do you mean mortal vessel?
No, I mean the Marantia vessel, the soul, the literal object, the soul. Okay, not your temple within, not none of that stuff. Okay, we're talking about this literal Marantia cavity that you're filling or emptying of value. Okay, you notice how they word it there. You know, spiritually insolvent, Marantially bankrupt. Okay. The guys with the big microscope can look inside that soul and see if there's a little drop of value still rattling around in there or not, or if it's been wiped spotlessly clean inside and it's a completely evacuated vessel. Okay. If it's emptied, and it takes supreme effort to empty it, because that last drop is the first drop that was put in there. It was put in there by God. It's a supreme drop. It's going to take a supreme effort to take that last drop out. But if you've done that, if you've actually taken out what God put in there, not just taken out what you put in there after that, but also taken out that first measure that God put in, then you're bankrupt. Okay, so all this issue about it doesn't matter how many mercy credits you have. I mean, it's just a simple assessment, see, of whether or not there's anything in that vessel or not that can be resurrected. Now, it also points out that, the adjuster may leave because, it's empty and everyone has determined that. But the seraphim continue on. Okay, and we should remind ourselves of that phenomenon. If you go to paper 113, the next paper, Seraphic Guardians of Destiny, in section 6, so on page 1247 in the single column, let's see, we want 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The eighth paragraph, or the third from the end, I believe, yeah. The one that starts the technique of justice, see that there? Let's read that. The technique of justice demands that personal or group guardians shall respond to the dispensational roll call in behalf of all non-surviving personalities. See, so this is what we're just talking about. It's already been determined he's non-surviving. The adjuster left because the microscope guy said there's nothing there. Okay. But the angels are going on with the formality. That's what we're talking about, the rest of that formality. The adjusters of such non-survivors do not return. And when the rolls are called, the seraphim respond, but the adjusters make no answer. This constitutes the quote-unquote resurrection of the unjust. In reality, the formal recognition, this is the formal, there was that technical recognition, but now we have the formal recognition. The formal recognition of the cessation of creature existence. Because, all this stuff we've basically been reading, it's really about when you're in that, potentially eternal state, immortal state, not the mortal state. So they bring you into that potentially immortal state, see, in full. And then these final judgment things happen. Okay, so the roll call. The roll call of justice always immediately follows the roll call of mercy. See, there's that. So, where the mercy credit thing and all that, follows the roll call of mercy, the resurrection of the sleeping survivors. But these are matters which are of concern to none but the supreme and all-knowing capital J judges. Of survival values. Such problems of adjudication do not really concern us, the angels. And remember, this is a primary supernaphim. It's our chief of seraphim that's writing this. Not a concern of the angels, but the capital J judges, who are the Ancients of Days, right? Right. See, so like I said, that you know, this is where you kind of have that formal Ancient of Day thing happening. But technically, it was over during the mortal life. If you actually managed to get the supremacy of negativity in the short little mortal life, okay, then there's this subsequent formality. Okay, and the other thing, that last paragraph, so, you know, just, you know, skip the little one after that, and let's just read that next one. All personal and group guardians in the system of Satania who went astray in the Lucifer rebellion, notwithstanding that many sincerely repented of their folly, are to be detained on Gerasim until the final adjudication of the rebellion. Already have the universal censors, oh, they were involved there, already have the universal censors arbitrarily taken from these disobedient and unfaithful guardians all aspects of their soul trusts, and lodged these Morantia realities for safekeeping in the custody of volunteer Sakanathim. Okay, I wanted to read that. So here's something that the universal censors, for instance, are doing with Sakanathim. That's, you know, a different sort of a thing. They're taking charge of rebellion guardian Seraphim. And who are these voluntary Sakanathim? Let's think about that. You know, so we're reading about all these Sakanathim. Well, you got all these very specific, you know, directionized Sakanathim. It's like, well, who on earth could volunteer? I mean, you know, you can't have ones that are trying to do the memory mercy thing, you know. So who could it be? You're flipping through here. Ah, yeah. There's a reserve corps of the primary Sakanathim.
Yeah.
Yes. And but such specialized work is undertaken only in emergencies, it says in there. I just wanted to connect the dots here since we're reading about the Sakanathim. You see, that's who's volunteering. And it's the universal censors that are kind of directly, you know, so that's kind of different to the system where, you know, the universal censors are only working with the discerners of spirits, you know, the secondary ones. And, you see, so there's...
They got their act together. They protected the souls.
Right. Right. And yeah, so I just, you know, when we read the reserve corps, we, you know, I thought we'd use an example of applying where exactly those are being used there. Okay. And even though the juiciest part is yet to do, we're not going to do it tonight.
So I need just a little bit of clarification. So
yep.
Angels and higher beings that went astray during the rebellion, after the final adjudication. So then, once they're doomed, so to speak. I mean, then does this mean that anything that was of value, as we've been taught, that nothing of value is ever lost?
Right.
That there is something there that the censors and aspects of their soul trust. And bring these to the safekeeping of the voluntary Sakanathim.
Okay, now, we're not talking about the souls of the angels. We're talking about human souls that the angels are the guardians of.
Right.
And if they're a group guardian, they could have thousands and thousands of souls in their safekeeping. And one of those group guardian Seraphim, you know, which is, you know, probably kind of likely if they haven't gotten up to the level where they have the integrity to be a personal guardian. I mean, you can imagine a number of those group guardian Seraphim that had thousands and thousands of souls from many different worlds in the local system. You know, they got this huge pile of souls, and they've gone bad. And
pile.
And
they would have some other
rules, would they? Yeah. They even mentioned that in there. If you read, actually, is it just right there? I lost my page. Where were we there in that?
I think,
is it actually that that paragraph that I skipped there?
1229.
No, let's see. No, wait a minute.
1248. 1248?
Yeah. Is that where we just were?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm having a hard time finding. Yeah, it's that paragraph I skipped. Group guardians may serve on a planet age after age and eventually become custodians of the slumbering souls of thousands upon thousands of sleeping survivors. They can also serve on many different worlds in a given system since the resurrection response occurs on the mansion worlds.
Yeah, but they would have gone, gotten rid of the souls and come back, wouldn't they, then? Maybe?
No. Well, there's a big mystery here. I mean, do they cart them around in some really big gold box all the time? But see, even if you take what seems like probably a more reasonable assumption that they, you know, they're putting them in the storage facility on the first mansion world, you know, so that the universal sensor and the Sakonophim don't have to rip them out of their hands necessarily. But the whole point is, you know, you need someone to take the place of that seraphim, because only the seraphim, or only an angel here, as we were saying, can actually, you know, hold a soul and put that Marantia brain into the Marantia body that's built for you on the first mansion world. Other beings can't hold them. Remember they mentioned that's one of the really kind of fascinating things about an angel, is they can hold these things. You know, the Sakonophim has to take that role.
But to answer your question, Joan, is if it was your guardian angel who had gone astray and you had passed on and you were a sleeping survivor and they were holding on to your soul, they went astray, your soul didn't go astray with them.
Yeah.
My question was about the soul of the rebellious.
Right. See, and that's not what it's talking about. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So. This last paragraph we'll hold for next time. They shift gears. It seems like a weird place to stop, but actually, it's a total change of gears. This is a huge paragraph. It's one of the most significant paragraphs in the entire book. So we're not going to do it in minus 8 minutes. It's one of the most important paragraphs. So we'll start up on that. What they do in this last paragraph, John, is related to what we were just talking about. They're giving you, okay, well, the memories of mercy do all this stuff related to these weighty matters of mercy credits and all this stuff we've been talking about, but they also do other things. And the last paragraph is about the other things, the teaching things that they do. And they use the opportunity to give us one of the most significant foundational nuggets of teaching in the entire Revelation, to talk about their teaching, the levels of meaning. Okay, and so that's why I had handed out all those things about the levels of meaning. If you want to hold on to them, you can.
Or we can leave them here.
Or you can leave them here, and we'll pick that up next time. Let's see. Anything else we want to do?
Now, who did you say that voluntary Sakonophim was, John?
Oh, if you go back to the primary Sakonophim, number 7, the reserve corps. It's one of those reserve Sakonophim, see? The ones that could actually be assigned to an oddball duty like that. So at the end of section 4 there, after the transport personalities, you have the reserve corps of primary Sakonophim, right before section 5.
The Solemnity of Trust?
No. So go to the beginning of section 5. Back a ways. Okay. Right before you see the reserve corps. Right before the secondary Sakonophim heading there.
Okay.
Yep, yeah, the reserve corps there. All right. Everyone satisfied? Okay, let's just take a moment here and reflect on it.